in case they are sued, in case there's a breach. So what challenges do they face in your view and in your region?
Yeah, I mean, I think one of the issues is that if there is a breach or there is a policy issue, oftentimes because it's there, they're trying to protect their reputation, they're trying to avoid fines. Oftentimes they don't want to let their customers know, or they don't want to broadcast that, and they try and fix it internally, or they try and otherwise avoid it or pretend like it's not there. And so, you know, while they have that motivation to do it as before the issue happens, if an issue arises, I think that there can be a conflicting issue to where they try and avoid that. The other thing that I think would be is, you know, once the other conflict that can arise is that they will be sensitive to the information that I think they are either legally required to, or that their customers are intentional, but they may use that data in ways that the customer doesn't want. So in other words, customers, I think a lot of people aren't aware of how all their data is probably used by businesses. In other words, to retarget them, to follow them around on the internet. So you always see those ads, you know, you go look at something on Amazon, then it follows you around for all the websites you go on. Well, they, you know, they don't necessarily want that. And so sometimes there's that tension to where businesses want to use that data, even if they keep it private and even if they keep it confidential, they still use that data in ways that customers probably don't want them to, because it's targeting them in a way that isn't beneficial to them.
Makes sense. And how do they address this when you say that there's a challenge around transparency? That is, once a breach has happened, once something has gone wrong, the intention is to limit the exposure towards the general public rather than put it in the domain. And of course, the laws in US do not enforce it, so they are legally entitled to do that. Maybe in some other countries it would be challenging. So how do you help them solve, or how do you see them solving it? Are they solving it, by the way?
Yeah, I mean, I think depending on the industry. So some industries, at least in the U.S., there's a whole lot of legal penalties if you have data breach. If you get into the medical industry and you get or let medical information get out, you can have major fines. Same thing even with, like, you know, you saw Facebook breaches, or you saw other social media where, or Yahoo, they got hacked, and they can have large, you know, financial impacts when the FCC or SEC or other people get involved, based on those breaches. So I think legally there are some repercussions, at least for some industries. Now, when you get to the small, now the problem is you get to the smaller businesses and startups, is most of the time the customers either they never find out, and if they do find out, they don't have the ability to really go out and do anything about it, because they're, you know, that one, their customers are small, they don't have the money to fund it, and they don't have the, and even if they go after the small business will probably just go out of business and it won't have any change. But I think, you know, you kind of hit on that, as I think transparency is a bigger thing. In other words, I don't think it usually the worst part about a data breach isn't the breach, it's the cover up after the fact. And I think a lot of times if you are forthright and you let the customers know, you know, when they sign up, saying, hey, here's all the things we're doing to make sure, and especially if you're working with a lot of confidential data, here's what we're doing. And, you know, we're not perfect, but we do everything that we know what or that's been recommended within our power, and we work with it. Now, there's a lot, you know, and then if there's a data breach, be honest with your customers and say, hey, there was this issue. And I think if you get ahead of it and you're honest with them, most of the time they're going to be understanding. And so I think that there's a hesitation, oh, I'll hide this, nobody will find out, and I'll just pretend like it never happens. And if you're on the flip side, if you're to be more honest and forthright with them, a lot of times you'd avoid the issues.
Makes sense. And I think you mentioned a couple of times it's based on the industry. And that's true, because I was talking to a medical devices client last week in the United States, and they want to be compliant with the GDPR, even though they are not yet in EU. The reason being, they see it as a showstopper for them to get access to the EU market. And they also see, even in the US market, having a GDPR compliance would increase their chances and acceptability of their product, as well as they want to go, you know, on the they want to launch an IPO, and they see that as an opportunity in privacy compliance. So there's the drivers are different when in certain industries, and in other industries the challenges, there's lack of awareness as well, because for them privacy is the last thing on the list, because it's first the cash, then the staff, then the action, and then getting in front of clients. And I don't think those kind of companies are putting privacy, or they know about privacy as much as they should.
No, I'd agree. And I think it is one that's coming more to the forefront of mind, and people are paying more attention just because they more out of self-interest. They've seen the negative repercussions. They've seen, you know, businesses get fined. They've seen, you know, have a negative impact on customers and people leaving the business. And so because it's so prevalent, it tends to be more of a focus or now than it used to be. And I think it will probably continue to shift that way.
Yeah. So if someone was to set up a business and they were to ask you an advice from IP perspective and privacy perspective, what would you tell them?
I would say get a strategy in place. I mean, most of the time, the biggest hurdle, with whether it's IP and getting protecting your intellectual property, whether it's protecting data, is that you don't think about it. You don't, you know, you don't do anything about it. You don't have a strategy in place until it's either too late, you've already had an issue. And a lot of times you're saying, even if it's, hey, we don't have the, we're a small business startup, we don't have the ability to go spend tens of thousands of dollars to do a, you know, make sure that all of our data is secure to the level that everybody suggests, at least have a strategy, say, okay, as we grow, as we get a bigger business, whether it's I need a patent or I need a trademark, let's factor that into the budget. If I'm working with a lot of sensitive data, as we grow, let's get a plan in place so that as we get bigger, we know what we're going to do so that we can continue to improve and protect on it. So I would say the biggest takeaway is to get that plan in place and to get that figured out ahead of time such that, that you can build or you can keep building that in as you go along.
I think that's very well said. It completely aligns with what I usually say in different words. I say, take informed decisions. So know about what's this privacy or even any other law, then make an approach, make a plan and kind of assess it, what needs to be done when. Take a risk-based informed decision saying, what do you do now and what do you do later, but don't go with, we will do it later. That's not an approach. Having a 2-hour or 4-hour awareness session with an expert would not do any harm. Rather, it can save you a lot in the long term.
Yep, I completely agree.
Yeah, so different words, but it's end of the day, we are saying the same thing. And I'm so happy to hear that, that it resonates with you. And by the way, for the listeners, it was not planned. Planned meaning we didn't align on it before our strategy. So yep. You mentioned that on a side note, apart from privacy and everything, that you are interested or fascinated or intrigued by Mandarin Chinese. What's that?
Yeah, so really that started with, so I served a religious mission for my church, so Church of Jesus Christ or Latter-day Saints, or sometimes nicknamed Mormon. So when I was 19, I did a year of college, decided I wanted to go serve a religious mission for my church. So I ended up going and serving in Taiwan, which is Mandarin speaking. And so I picked up the language initially when I went over there, lived a couple years there in Taiwan and served that mission. And then when I came back to college, I decided, well, I'd like to continue to improve my language ability. So I added on as a second degree as I was going through school. So kind of started with the religious mission for my church and it evolved from there.
Interesting. And you also have this, the Inventive Journey podcast. Tell us something about it.
Yeah, so the Inventive Journey is a podcast I started about a year ago or so, somewhere right around there. And it was where, you know, I've done several startups myself, and I've also worked with a ton of startups and small businesses. And, you know, one of the things that I found is a commonality throughout all of them is while they all have different journeys, it is always a lonely journey in the sense that, you know, most people don't know what it's like to do hiring and firing, marketing, sales, product development, being the janitor, doing payroll, doing taxes, and kind of all of those. And one week you feel like you're a success and the next week you feel like you're a failure. And so kind of with all of that, started the podcast really with the focus on telling the journey of how people got to where they're at today and sharing the, hey, it's not always a simple journey. It's not always just, you know, the overnight success. Overnight successes are usually 10 years in the making and kind of sharing that journey. And so the podcast really focuses on, you know, kind of how people got to where they're at today and kind of what that journey and how they weave to get to where they're at.
I can vouch for it's a roller coaster. And every day, not even every week, you have a feeling. One day it feels like, okay, you have clients and it's coming. And then you have two discussions and it seems like, okay, everything will be fine in a few days. And then two clients don't come. And next day you are thinking, because you have light on some client work and you think like, oh, is it going to work? And it is amazing.
Absolutely. Yep. I used to always say it was a roller coaster, and I had, and I can't take credit for it, but somebody was actually on the podcast said, you know, it's not really as much of a roller coaster. It's more like the whole theme park. You know, you get into the parking lot and you're excited to go in, and it, you know, it's fun and exciting. And then you get in and you go on a few roller coasters and you get sick and you have to take a break because you're not feeling well. And then you go, you know, binge eat on a whole bunch of food and it's fun for a little while. Then you go with the other ride, you throw up, then you go on the bumper cars, you get banged around, and you know, it's kind of that whole theme park experience, because there's a whole bunch of different parts of your journey that all are different, and some are exciting and fun and others make you a little sick or you have to take a break from. So I always kind of think it as the whole theme park, I think is a pretty good analogy.
Thanks for listening. And now we ask you for some help. Take a moment to subscribe and review this podcast. Your support matters. And if you have done it already, thank you so much. Now, if you have questions or suggestions, drop an email at hello@fitforprivacy.com. And finally, if you know someone who will benefit from this, share this podcast with them and help us grow. Thank you so much. Stay safe and see you next time.